Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on Sunday, March 31st, 2019. This is episode 1579. I'm going on vacation for the next 2 weeks. Next week, you'll still get a brand new podcast because we recorded calls ahead of time. In fact, you'll get two brand new podcasts. The week following, Rich DeMuro from KTLA will be filling in. And then I'll be back with you live 2 weeks from now, right after tax time. Good luck with your taxes. And now, on with the show. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LastPass. Ensure safer workplace password sharing with LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, you know, all the gizmos and gee-jaws that we talk about each week on this show. Anything with a chip in it, I guess, is how I put it. If you want to talk about that, a little computer counseling, a little hand-holding on the information superhighway, a little buying advice, or maybe you want to just understand something a little bit better. 8888-ASK. Leo is my phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still call, and it's still free because it's toll free in the U.S., but you'll need some sort of program like Skype Out that can call a regular phone number from a voice over internet line. 888-827-5536. The website, techguylabs.com. And I tell you that right up front because you can go there and get everything, not just the phone number, but also answers to questions. After the fact, we put audio and video from the show up there. All of that is at techguylabs.com. So you don't fuss if I say something. Go, wait, say it slower, or I want to write it down. It's all there. James DeRuvo is writing it down. Thank you, James. Techguylabs.com. And there's no sign up. It's free. There's nothing. I don't want anything. it's a service. Chat room, which you'll also find links to on the website, is irc.twit.tv. That's all the kids participating. And they're helping me out. And you can be in there and help me out, too, with additional thoughts and answers to the questions we get. First big IPO of the year, I think, for tech stocks anyway. We're going to see Uber later this year, some others. But Lyft had a very successful IPO on Thursday. Lyft is another ride-sharing service. This makes it look good for Uber. This is so funny because these are companies that lose money. I mean, that's really all they do. They lose money. They lose a lot of money. It's one of the reasons, you know, they've received billions and billions in venture capital, and that's one of the reasons they're now going to the stock market, because they need more. 70 million shares, market valuation of, for Lyft, a company that has made no money ever, $22.2 billion. Holy cow. And Uber will probably be even more. Those are the two battling it out. There are actually many ride-sharing companies when you look internationally. In fact, there's bigger ones in China. There's Didi. But the interesting thing is it's very hard for these companies to make money right now because they have drivers. And you might say, well, yeah, of course they have drivers. Yeah, but that's the stock market. I hope the investors understand that these companies will continue to lose money as long as humans are at the wheel. And so the market is investing in the idea that someday soon enough that they won't run through all the money they've raised, Lyft and Uber and all the others will have automated self-driving cars picking up people. And then maybe it makes sense. Right now, last time I checked, Uber, I don't know what Lyft's numbers are, but they're probably comparable. You know, it's a good deal, right? It's cheaper than a taxi in most cases, except for when it's raining and then they do their surge pricing and it costs an arm and a leg. But most of the time, people take Uber. It costs less than a taxi. And that's because Uber subsidizes 41% of the cost. Almost half of what it costs to take an Uber, they pay, not you. You're getting a deal. That's, yeah. And this is the Silicon Valley way. This is how Silicon Valley works. It's so strange. The Silicon Valley way is, we'll make up in volume. I don't know. We're going to lose money on every customer. But that's okay because we're in investment mode. That's the word they like to use. We're in investment mode. We're building a massive customer base. And somehow, magically, we're going to get to profit. And magic is the word here because it's very hard to figure out how. Even if you look at their bicycle service. So Lyft and Uber also offer rental bicycles and scooters. Those you see them all over, you know, in New York and L.A. and San Francisco. And, you know, I first encountered it in Santa Monica with all those Lime scooters lying all around, all pell-mell, all over the place. It's great. I mean, I use them because it's a really convenient way for a short hop, right, where you don't want to get a car. You just want to go, whoop. I just got to go a few miles or, you know, a mile. It's great. But the economics of it are insane. They don't make enough on those scooters to pay for the scooters, let alone the license fees, the taxes, the requirements of the cities. The scooters themselves cost more than they make in their entire lifetime. It's an insane business. It's fun. We may, 20 years from now. See, the part of the problem is autonomous vehicles. It's a big unknown. You know, if you can get to cars that don't have humans driving them, I mean, think of the unknowns. First of all, will you get in them? Will anybody get in them? Will you be terrified? It's kind of a nightmare thinking about, I'm in a car that doesn't have, there's no steering wheel, there's no brake pedal, there's no gas pedal, there's no human in the front. It's just me in a hurtling cabin of death, praying that the computer doesn't crash into something or fall over the edge of a precipice. But of course, computers never make mistakes. Never. So that's problem one. Getting in the darn thing and whether, you know, consumer acceptance. Problem number two is regulator acceptance. And while there's a huge growth in the number of test vehicles on the road these days, and that's happening in China too. I just saw a graph. China's starting to catch up. But the regulators still haven't said general approval. Yeah, go ahead. You know, let's get those self-driving cars on the road. There's also the issue of human drivers. Self-driving cars, if it were all self-driving cars, I'd have a lot more confidence. It might take a while to get somewhere as they, after you, Alphonse. No, after you, Alphonse. No, after you. But at least we wouldn't run into each other. But with humans, you know, there's the human fact. We're not great drivers. We're unpredictable. And we do things when you're driving. I don't know. Notice this if you're in the car as you drive. We do things that a computer can't do. For instance, they're trying to train them to do this. But come to a four-way stop. In California, we have these things called four-way stops. And there are rules about who goes first if you arrive simultaneously and stuff. And if you don't, you know, there's also rules. But watch what you do. You look at the driver. You look to see where he's looking. And often you look to see his tacit acknowledgement that you exist. And very often a little wave, right? There's all sorts of, even though we're both in cars, there's all sorts of human-to-human interactions the computers just can't do. Now, if it's computer to computer, they'll do that. They'll do it better than we do. They'll talk to each other. It'll be amazing. But if it's computer to human, the computer can't tell. There was a recent accident. It was last year. It was an accident. I think it was an Uber. No, it was a Google self-driving car. And the Google self-driving car was in had to change lanes because it was in a lane that on the map didn't have any construction, but they got there, it saw the construction, so at least it stopped. And then it was going to merge into the next lane over. It saw the bus coming down that lane, and it assumed, I guess, that the bus would stop. But now you're a human. You know the bus is not going to stop. Buses do not stop. Buses are big and have the right of way. So the Uber merged, or the Waymo, that's the Google one, merged in and the bus hit it. Not a horrible wreck. In fact, it was a slow speed and nobody got hurt and all that stuff. But that's an example. Now, the Google guys, the engineers say, well, no, we like it when that happens. Oh, good. I'm glad you like it. Because now we can adjust our algorithm to accommodate the fact that buses don't stop. You know, there's a lot of those. There's a lot of those. So I wonder, I don't know, I wonder if 20 years from now we'll look back at Lyft and Uber and all of these things and go, yeah, we thought they were going to make money. Who knows? Maybe not. I'm the guy who didn't buy Google stock, Apple stock. I told my dad to get out of Apple stock. You know, he'll never let me forget this. About 10 years ago, Steve Jobs was just coming back. I said, dump that Apple stock. Well, that was, yeah, okay. That was wrong. I was wrong. Dad will never let me forget that. You know, on Thanksgiving, you told us to dump our Apple stock. Good thing we didn't listen to you. Yeah, I know. Mr. Tech Guy. Yeah, I know. This is why I do not buy or recommend stocks of any tech stocks, certainly. And I do not recommend stocks of any kind. And you should never listen to me if I do. Because I don't know what I'm talking about. I just wonder. That's all. All right, we're going to take your calls in just a second. 8888-ASK-LEO. Ladies and gentlemen, the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer, our phone angel. Hello, Kimmy.
Good morning.
Thanks to Big Pee-wee for making your theme.
Now, it's funny that you were talking about Ubers and Lyfts and cars like that, because on the way here, I had a moronic idiot with Luber. Uber and Lyft stickers all over the car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just weaving in and out of traffic, tailgating people.
Oh, Lord.
I got his license plate number. Good. Trying to figure out what to do with it.
Give him 4 stars. No, 3.
No. What's the... 0 stars.
0 stars.
But I definitely not somebody.
What's
I would
your Uber
be.
Rating? Do you have an Uber rating?
I think mine is high because I give everybody 5 out of 5, but I haven't had to deal with any raging maniacs.
My
yet.
Wife got in an Uber the other day, and the guy said, are you new to Uber? Because I've never seen anybody with a 5-star rating. She said, no, I've been using it for years.
Oh, yeah.
She said, I've never seen that before.
I don't
Surely
have...
somebody doesn't like you.
I think I've used it half a dozen times. Yeah. So I'm new.
Yeah. I think I have. I have a pretty good Uber rating. I don't remember what it was, but it's in the 4s.
Yeah.
I don't know. Why should we take that seriously? If you get too low, they won't pick you up, right?
Right. So you do want a good rating, but...
4.82.
That's what you have?
That's what I got, baby. 4.82. Oh, and I have Uber Cash in my wallet. Why do I have cash in my wallet from Uber? They give it now. This is their financial model. They're giving us money now.
Oh yeah, like I've got $1 off of my Lyft rides right now. The other day I took a trip and I had half off.
It's crazy. I just don't understand the financial model. But you know, I'm not an economist. I'm old fashioned. You know, this business, we didn't raise money. We didn't, you know, all we could do was spend the money we made.
Right.
Crazy thought. Crazy. Anyway, what can I, and that's why you make so much money, Kim.
Me?
Yeah. No, actually, you don't work for me.
No, I don't.
I have no control over you. You work for the radio network.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. I guess. Don't say anything.
I have worked in this business too long. You don't want to
words,
say anything.
No words.
You don't want to burn any bridges.
You've been answering the phones for a good long time.
Yeah, Henry in Prescott Valley actually called yesterday, but he got cut off.
Oh, I'm sorry,
at
Henry.
The end of the show. Yeah. But he's got a computer that's got Microsoft Office on it and then another one that doesn't. And he wants to know if he'd be a good candidate for a remote PC or does he just need to buy another Microsoft.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah. Office license.
Thank you, Kim. The unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer. Hello, Henry from Prescott, Arizona.
How you doing today, Leo?
I'm wonderful. I'm sorry about yesterday.
Oh, that's no problem. That's no problem.
Ran out of time.
I devote my weekends to you. Oh, so,
thank you. I'm eternally grateful.
By the way, don't wear your Hawaiian shirts over to Hawaii. Buy a couple of new ones when you get there because it's fun to haggle.
You're supposed to bring. Somebody told me that because I was saying, should I wear my Hawaiian shirts to Hawaii? They said, no, you don't bring them to Hawaii. You bring them from Hawaii. So
that's right.
I have a rather large collection of them, unfortunately. So I don't know what to do. I don't need more. Let's put it that way. Although,
Okay.
I'm sure my wife will buy me a few while we're there.
Probably.
Yes, because that's how she likes to haggle. I'm not a haggler. I say, what's the price? Here's your money. Thank you very much. I don't know why. I'm just not a haggler. In fact, it was insulting when we were in Morocco, and I just said, okay, here's the money. They were, like, insulted.
Yeah. Yeah, you're supposed to haggle there. You're
supposed to haggle. It's like you don't care enough about me to haggle, haggle with me. You idiot. What can I do for you, Mr. P?
Well, I am basically the guy that Steve Jobs used to dream of, because I have been totally immersed in the Apple ecosystem for my whole life. And I have, of course, the desktop iMac, which has Microsoft Office on it. Mm-hmm. And when I travel, I have a MacBook Air. And I was in Scottsdale last summer. We go there every August for a...
You go to Scottsdale in August?
For the folk music festival.
Oh, we've talked before. Yes, of course.
Yes, we have.
Yes, I remember, Henry.
And,
yeah.
And when I was forced to retire last year, I developed a side hustle of editing reports for investigators in California.
Oh, neat. And you do that in Word, probably, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And imagine my surprise when I got some reports to edit over there, and I found I didn't have Microsoft Word on the...
Well, and you're going to run up against, eventually, the additional issue. I take it you bought Word, you know, in a package and downloaded it, installed it. And what's going to happen is that, and Microsoft does this, I don't think it's cool, but they do it, is they change file formats, and eventually you're going to get reports that you're going to need a newer version of Word. So my suggestion for you, it's actually a pretty good deal, is to look at an Office 365 subscription.
Well, I have a subscription for the Mac.
Well, then you should be able to install it on, I think, up to 5 different machines. Check your subscription. But typically, with an Office 365 subscription, it's multiple licenses. So go to your office.com, log in, and there's an install button, and see if you can install more copies. I have Office 365. It was, I think, $7 or $8 a month for the home user. And I can install it on Macs and Windows and unlimited iPads, iPhones, and Android devices.
Oh, that sounds good.
So that's actually the best deal out there, especially considering the box version is hundreds of dollars. $7 or $8 a month is not bad. So that's what I would look at that. I'm looking at my Office right now. I have 3 installs. That means I have, I think, 2 more I can do. So that's and you can deactivate them and install them elsewhere, too. I mean, the other thing you could do is you can always use Office on the web, which is free. But I would check to see, depending on what version of Office 365 you have.
I think it's 2011.
So normally when you get Office, it's a subscription. Do you have a subscription?
Uh-huh. Yeah, they renew it automatically every year.
You're paying. Okay. So you should, that subscription means you can usually install it on multiple machines. You can move it around from machine to machine.
Uh-huh.
If they're charging you and you can get the most recent version too. This is newer than 2011 though, so I want to make sure. I don't know if that's what you have. You should check and see what you have.
Well, I imagine it's 365. I originally had 2011.
Oh, okay. If you have Office 365, you can upgrade it to the current version and keep it upgraded for free and install it on up to 5 computers.
Yeah, I get periodic upgrades automatically.
Yeah, they'll come in the,
But I just wondered if it would be more fun to use remote PC.
It wouldn't be more fun.
Okay.
Honestly, I'd put Office on there only because there's the overhead of doing it over the internet. And, you know, for your mind's sake, unless you're short on hard drive space.
Oh, no. No, I'm fine there. So
yeah. I would absolutely just install it. I have it installed on all the machines I use. In fact, the nice thing, you know, I have the business version because we bought it for Twit. But I, for a long time, I think for 3 years, I had the Office 365 Home. And it was one of, it's one of the best deals in software, I think.
It really is. I think they charge me $99 a year or something.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's about right. That means you can install it on five systems. So,
okay.
I mean, you could try it with a remote PC, but I just think the overhead of doing that, it's not slow, but it's slower. And especially if you're typing or you're dragging and dropping big chunks of text, I think it's better to have it local.
Great. Well, I appreciate all the information you give me.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Henry. Remind me, trombone?
No, I play...
banjo.
Tenor and six-string guitar.
That's right.
Four-string and six-string.
That's right.
I'm playing with Rob, who you know well, who goes there every year, too.
Fun.
Rob Ryder.
Yeah, he calls, too. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Do you perform at all otherwise, or is it just that once a year?
Well, it's been once a year, but I'm working on an educational program where I want to go to the local schools and as a volunteer and teach American history through folk songs.
Oh my goodness, that would be amazing! Oh, those kids would be so lucky. Please do that, Henry.
I'm going to do my best. I'm putting it together.
The history of folk music in this country is fascinating. My mom used to go to folk music camp and take us when I was a kid in Upper New York State. Pete Seeger would be there and a bunch of others. And
what a great way to learn.
And they don't have music in schools in a lot of areas. I don't know what it's like in Arizona, but here in California, the music's left.
Yep.
And it's a shame. It's a crying shame. So I think that would be a great volunteer thing to do.
Yeah, one of the songs that I'm doing at camp this year was taught to me by Arlo Guthrie.
Oh, my goodness.
Used to appear a lot with Pete Seeger.
Yeah, Pete and Arlo, yeah. And, of course...
Arlo is a delightful guy.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
You wouldn't believe.
Oh, I bet. Henry, I got to run, but it was a pleasure talking to you.
It's always fun to talk with you. Have a good trip.
Take care. Would you get a Bolt... A Nero or a Leaf?
I would probably lean towards the Nero right now.
That's what I thought. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk automobiles, vehicles with our car guy. He's a principal researcher at Navigant Research, Sam Abulsamid, and he is always a joy to have on the show. Hey, Sam, how you doing? All the way from the Motor City.
Hey, Leo, and unfortunately, woke up this morning and winter was back again.
Oh, what?
Flirtation with spring.
Oh, man. I hate it when that happens.
Temperature dropped to like 26 degrees, and we had a light dusting of snow on the ground. So,
I don't know how you do it.
But it's supposed to get back up into the 50s this week. So.
Yeah. You should move to South Detroit.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually sort of in West Detroit, just outside of Ann Arbor. So.
Let's talk.
Actually, South Detroit is what's also known as Windsor.
Yeah, Canada. It's an in joke. It's a joke based on that Journey song, and he, you know, born and raised in South Detroit, which is fact not existent.
Yeah.
So we never really could figure out what he was talking about. So Sam. You heard me talking earlier probably about Lyft and Uber and how really the only way their business model makes sense is if there's no human drivers.
Well, even then, it's not entirely clear that their business model makes sense.
Okay.
If we go back a couple of years, you know, when Travis Kalanick was on stage talking about autonomous vehicles being an existential threat to Uber's business.
Oh, really?
He talked about it in that way. And that's why, you know, that was his rationale for Uber getting into developing their own autonomous systems. But the problem is that, yes, today, you know, about 70% of every dollar that, you know, Uber, Lyft and these other ride hailing companies bring in goes out to drivers. And the fares that they collect only cover about 60% of the actual cost of providing the service. And the reason for that is because, they're for these companies, it's different from a social network or a lot of other companies in the technology space where there's no network effect from customers. There's no switching cost for customers. So there's nothing to lock you in. You know, if you decide you're going to use an iPhone or an Android phone and you want to switch, you know,
that's
then
a big
you have to buy a new phone.
Yeah.
You have to buy new apps and all this other stuff. Or if you're on a social network and you want to switch from one to the other, you have to get all your friends to come with you. Otherwise, that new social network has no value. But with a ride hailing app, you know, you can just open up another app on your phone. If you don't want to use an Uber or Lyft one day and you want to use the other one, there's no switching cost for customers. And so the only way that they can keep customers in is to keep the fares low and also make the wait times for rides short. And the
way
you do that is by having lots of drivers on your platform.
Yeah.
But to have lots of drivers on your platform, you have to pay them more, you know, and give them these bonuses and everything else.
I think Uber just cut the driver pay. So
yeah, they have. And Lyft has done the same thing at various times as well. And, you know, the idea behind, you know, going to autonomous vehicles is you eliminate the cost of the driver. But the problem is for these companies right now, they don't have any assets. They don't own any of the cars. They don't have to maintain them or put fuel in them. And so they're very asset light. So their costs are actually fairly low, except for, you know, having to pay drivers. So if they switch to autonomous cars, now they have to buy billions of dollars a year worth of vehicles and maintain those vehicles and put fuel or electricity in those vehicles. And that's a huge cost. And it's not entirely clear that they, you know, that they will, that that is a path to profitability for these companies. So, you know, because they don't have any manufacturing infrastructure today to build cars. So they're going to have to get somebody to build them for them or buy them from somebody. So it's not necessarily a path to profitability. And in Lyft's prospectus for their IPO, you know, they said in there that, you know, we don't know if we're going to ever be able to get to profitability. They said it in so many words.
Amazing. So, and they still raised $22 billion, or they're worth $22 billion. That's amazing.
Yeah.
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 So in part of this, then, whether it's going to work or not, is self-driving vehicles. And you have behind you, in the image behind you, two autonomous vehicles sensing one another. They're both from Volvo.
Well, actually, they're not even meant to be autonomous. It's just a visual.
So driver assist.
Showing forward collision warning and that sort of technology and automatic emergency braking.
Who has the Bell self-driving or driver assist, I guess we should say, vehicle in production right now that you could buy?
The technology is largely becoming fairly commoditized. There's not a whole lot of difference between most of them, you know, at least for the basic driver assist stuff.
Yeah, I drove. You brought me one of those Cadillac CT6.
CT6,
that's right.
Yeah.
And I have, of course, a Tesla Model X, and they were very comparable.
Right. And, you know, when you step up, so, you know, the type of stuff in this graphic, you know, is what we call level one, where it's basic driver assist stuff. Level two is where you start to combine these multiple functions together, like autopilot or super cruise, where you combine speed and steering control together. And those, you know, again, those work pretty well, you know, within the limits of what they're designed to do. In the case of the level two stuff, I would say the Cadillac system is still the best. It's more limited in what it can do, but it functions really well within that scope.
Yes, I thought so. Yeah, I was impressed. Yeah.
But what we're seeing now in Europe is actually a move to start mandating. You know, so far none of this technology is actually mandatory for manufacturers. But there's been a move in Europe now to start mandating some of these technologies.
Interesting.
And the European Commission has just passed some rules that still have to be passed by all the member states. But that would mandate 9 different driver safety systems on all new cars from 2024. You know, and that includes, you know, things like automatic emergency braking, lane departure warning, and backup cameras that are either standard already pretty much across on most new cars or will be within the next year or so. So those are no problem.
Do we have any evidence that these systems do save lives or prevent accidents?
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely statistics to show that the automatic emergency braking, AEB, does reduce rear-end collisions by a significant amount. So those systems definitely work. Backup cameras are absolutely valuable, especially on a lot of new cars, a lot of new vehicles where rear visibility is not great because you might have a high rear deck or an SUV.
I can't drive without a backup camera anymore.
Yeah.
I literally can't drive anymore without them. I look over my shoulder and go, I don't bend that way anymore.
Right. So systems like that are definitely a huge benefit. But what they want to add in the EU is they want to require manufacturers to design steering columns with a standard interface to accept an alcohol interlock for a breathalyzer.
Whoa.
They also
doesn't mean it'll
have,
be built in, but it's an interface.
Right. So presumably if you get busted for a DUI and the judge orders it, it's something that they could plug into your car, without having to do a lot of work. They also want to have an accident data recorder. Cars today have event data recorders when the airbag goes up, but they only store a very small amount of data.
The black box in an airplane, a flight recorder.
Yeah. So they want to have more data recorded.
Interesting.
But one of the big things that they're proposing is what they're calling the intelligent speed assistance, which would use GPS and speed limit sign recognition from the cameras that's used for the AEB and lane keeping to notify the driver of the speed limit and even be able to adjust the vehicle speed limit speed on its own by controlling the engine output. And this one is likely to be quite controversial, although some manufacturers, Volvo just announced a couple of weeks ago that starting in 2020 or 2021, they're going to limit all of their cars to 112 miles per hour top speed.
Oh, interesting. So if this happens in Europe, you think American manufacturers will follow suit? Will we see these kinds of devices more commonly in the U.S.?
Some of the stuff, things like backup cameras are already standard. Those have been mandated now already here. The automatic AEB and lane keeping systems are rapidly becoming standard equipment. They probably will be pretty much standard anyway, just because of market pressure in the next 2 to 3 years.
Sam Abdul-Samid, thank you. We're out of time. Principal researcher, Navigant Research, our car guy. The future is bright, except for Uber and Lyft. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So you like the Niro of the three?
I like the Bolt a lot too.
They're a Chevy family, so they're kind of leaning towards the Bolt. Also, since it's for Michael, a smaller car, we don't need all that SUV space.
Yeah, the Bolt and the Niro, they have roughly the same interior space. The Niro might be just a little bit more. The Bolt's a little bit taller. The Niro's a little bit longer, so the proportions are a little different, but they're pretty comparable.
Oh, okay.
And they have about the same range.
Yeah, the range. And I was surprised on the Bolt's not bad at all.
Yeah. So either one, the one difference to keep in mind, though, is that starting April 1st, tomorrow, the tax credit on the Bolt drops in half from $7,500 to
$3,750. Oh, that's terrible. GM
hit their, they hit their 200,000 threshold.
Oh, man.
So if you don't get one today, then it's going to cost you effectively an extra $3,750 if you're going to buy it.
Oh, yikes. I'll tell Lisa.
Yeah. But I like them both. I would test drive them both. One complaint that some people have had about the Bolt is they don't like the seats. They think the seats are a little too thin. I personally didn't have an issue with them. I thought they were fine. But, I would especially, take Michael out for a ride in it and make sure he's comfortable with it.
Yeah.
But
because he's a big boy.
Right.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, they're both great cars. They both drive really well.
Good. It's back to the phones we go with line two, Sadiq in Orlando. Hi, Sadiq.
Hello, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling from sunny Florida. What's up?
Well, I actually have a question about a mini tablet recommendation, but I did want to tell you that my buddy was tasked by the EU to write the guidelines on self-flying vehicles, so he has to meet with Uber and Lyft and some company from Spain. So
no kidding. Wow. What does he do that he knows this stuff?
So he used to actually, we knew each other from Penn State, but he was I forget what kind of engineer, but he's got a PhD, but he used to work for Augusta Westra in Philadelphia, engineering their helicopters, and then he got hired by the EU many years ago to investigate helicopter crashes over there. And then last month he was tasked to do the guidelines. So.
How fascinating. What a great job.
Yeah, especially the benefits.
Oh, really? He gets a lot of nice cars, probably. His garage is full.
No. I'm talking he gets, at least 4 weeks off.
I don't want to hear it. I know. I know. We get Australians in here. They say, yeah, I'm on sabbatical. I get a year off after whatever, 20 years. It's like, come on, man. Come on, man. Exactly. August off. Yeah. Well, we work. That's okay. We work hard here in the U.S. We're hard
that's
workers.
Right.
So mini, what do you mean by a mini tablet?
So what I'm doing right now is I'm a traveling hospital medicine physician. So what I do is I have some medical apps on my Pixel 3.
Okay.
But I also have a book in the pocket of my white coat. It's maybe 4 inches in width. Where anytime I read a journal article and I see some sort of algorithm like high blood pressure treatment or gout treatment or something, I'll scan it into a PDF and then I'll print it out and I'll paste it in my book. But what's going on is that I have so many algorithms and they're not in order. It's difficult to figure out where I put it. So what I was doing is I have a Google Drive folder, a medicine folder, and I was going on my Pixel where I would just, you know, let's say high blood pressure or
makes
something
sense
in the hospital.
Yeah.
But it's the screen is too small.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about replacing my book where I would need some sort of tablet, but it's the caveats are I need a, you know, Wi-Fi. I don't need LTE. I need to be able to access Google Drive and to look at PDFs and Word documents. And my pocket of my white coat is about 6 inches, so I was going to limit to like 4 or 5 inches. And if it could last long, because typically my shifts are about 12 hours. Sometimes I work 24 hours straight.
Yeah.
And I may look at it like one time an hour, maybe for 5 to 10 minutes.
This is a great idea. And I'm very impressed. I guess this is in medicine, modern medicine. There's a lot to keep up with. And using a technology like this, that's brilliant. Android tablets are really not great, unfortunately. There are small Android tablets, but I'm not sure I could really recommend them. I think the best small tablet out there, and Apple just updated it, is the iPad mini. I don't know if it's as small as you need it to be. It's 7 inches. But I think it would fit in a lab coat pocket, a physician's coat. And
is there anything besides Apple?
You don't want to go Apple. I'll give you some other recommendations. What I would do with Apple, and what I do right now with Apple with PDFs, instead of storing them on Google Drive, I will import them into iBooks, which has a very nice interface. It's easy to use. And in a sense, I'm making my own books. And so I do that. All of my consumer manuals, because you can download everything nowadays as a PDF, go into iBooks.
Mm-hmm.
There are other really nice applications for this, like GoodNotes, that will also use the pencil so you can annotate. However, since you don't want to go with iOS, that sounds to me like you're an Android. You're dedicated to Android.
Yeah, I just don't like proprietary software. My first computer was an Apple IIc, but ever since then,
hey, it served you well.
Oh, not Apple.
It served you well. You know, it's unfortunate because Google used to make a really wonderful 7-inch tablet, the Nexus 7. I have two right in front of me because I still use them, but they're super annuated. I think really the only Samsung has a 4-inch Galaxy Tab Nook. I'm sorry, 7-inch. It's called the Galaxy Tab 4 Nook. About $200. Samsung's Android is probably the best out there. Asus and Acer both make 7-inch tablets that I would not hesitate to look at. But I think I probably would recommend the Galaxy for this.
Samsung.
Yeah, okay. Samsung. They've really gotten better and better at Android devices. My current favorite phone, and I have a Pixel 3, is the Samsung S10 Plus. It's just a fantastic phone. If that screen, though, on the Pixel 3 is not big enough, you probably do need to go to a tablet. I don't know of any larger phones. I'm wondering if Huawei, Huawei is a funny story because they make great gear, but of course, they are currently in the doghouse in the United States and some other countries because there are claims that the Chinese government could use them to spy on us, etc. Yet they make excellent stuff, and they have a number of small tablets that are really quite good and quite aggressively priced. So I see a 10. I'm just looking to see if they have something even a little smaller. That would be another company that they do a funny thing with Android. They have their own skin. I guess I'd probably go with Samsung. People sometimes complain about bloatware on Samsung, but it's really minor these days. Yeah.
When you say the Samsung, I think you said 7-inch. That's 7-inch diagonal, right? That's not the width.
Yeah, those should fit. Those should fit in the pockets of your coat. I think.
Okay.
Yeah. But I would I would wear your coat to a store and see, you know, Best Buy and others have these. I would just, you know, slip it in just to make sure. But yeah, I don't think you're gonna have any trouble getting it in there. Let me just see which. Yeah, I don't think an Amazon is a good choice. Those are cheap. But I don't think they're a good choice. The Samsung Galaxy Tab S2 is the lightest out there because it's made out of plastic.
Oh, great.
So that's probably a very good choice, $350 for 32 gigs. It's a little bigger. It's 8 inches. But, again, go to Best Buy or Walmart or one of the stores that sells this kind of stuff and slip it in your pocket. Warn them ahead of time. I just want to see if it'll fit. I just want to see if it'll fit. But I think those are probably my best choice. The Amazons are cheap, but they're also low and slow. They're really media playback devices. And since you're using Google Drive, I do have to admit that Google Drive on iOS is not an ideal experience. I'm not sure if it's Apple's fault or Google's fault, but for some reason, it does not work well on iOS. So if you're really dedicated to Google Drive, you're right not to go iOS. Take a look at the Samsung.
Excellent. Thank you so much,
hey,
Leo.
It's great to talk to you, Sandeep. Thanks for calling. Have a good one. This is an interesting category that's, I think, almost dying out because as phones get bigger and bigger, people are increasingly saying, well, that's big enough. You know, okay, maybe I would like a little bigger. Nobody's making anything more than a, you know, 6.25 or 6.5-inch phone. I think the new Huawei P30 is 6.4 inches. That's as big as I've seen. And those don't feel big because they have no bezels. There's no frame around the screen. But I think I do like these mini tablets. I think there's something to be said for these mini tablets. They just seem to they get the job done. I'm kind of a fan. Really love the mini. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography. We got your smartphones. We got your smart watches. We got all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo, the number if you want a little computer counseling. I'm here to help. The shingle is out. The sign is flipped over. The doctor is in. Phone number. Website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. And the chat room is irc.twit.tv. And G. Scott in the chat room reminded me, for our last caller, for Sadiq in Orlando, who's the doctor, he wants to carry notes and downloaded information. He puts it on his phone, but he'd like something a little bit bigger. He wanted a mini tablet suitable for fitting in his, you know, little lab coat pocket there, which I recommended a Galaxy. But G. Scott reminds me that we're about to see the blossoming of folding phones. And actually, that would be a perfect application for that, the Samsung Galaxy Fold, which has a 4-inch, it's basically looks like a phone. It's a little thicker. Well, a lot thicker. It's like two phones stacked. 4-inch screen on the front uses a regular phone, and then open it up and you've got it's smaller than a 7-inch tablet, but it's a decent size, and it's also a little more square, right? So, but it's a decent size display. It might be just right for what he wants. The only problem I have with this is we don't know how well it's going to work. I'm mostly concerned about the bending of the display. Is it going to wear out after, you know, you open it 100 times and then it breaks? Is it going to crinkle or crease? We don't know. And, you know, that's going to be a big question mark. So I certainly wouldn't buy one of these folding phones in the first year because we don't know how well they'll age. Other companies are doing other folding form factors. There's a tri-fold phone. Who's doing that? I've forgotten. Is it Huawei? There's a tri-fold that opens up. It's got screens front, back, and in the middle. It's like crazy. And then there's already one that came out at CES that I would not recommend. That's fairly expensive, the Royol, and it's almost $2,000. Of course, so is a Samsung, isn't it? They're going to be expensive. That's the other problem. I wouldn't want to be the guinea pig for that. But it is, I guess, the response to that question. Well, if a 6-inch phone isn't big enough and a tablet's too big, what's in the middle? What do you do in the middle? 8888 Ask Leo. Let's go back to the phones. Robert in Mira Mesa, California. Thanks for hanging on, Robert.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call. Always a pleasure to listen to your show.
Thank you so
I really much. Enjoyed with the caller from Arizona. You were discussing Pete Seeger.
Yeah.
And best performer ever.
I love Pete Seeger. Grew up listening to him. I was a little bit young for the Weavers, his folk trio, but I listened to him as a solo artist, saw him many times. And I was very honored. About 20 years ago, I got to record Pete Seeger. He was in town and he needed somewhere to record a track for a charity album. And he came to the radio station. He said, "Can I record this here?" I said, "We got an 8-track. Come on in." So that was one of the great moments of my life. It was a real honor.
Magnificent.
Yeah, what a great guy, too.
Yeah, he is just the best performer, best person ever.
And don't you love his voice? There's something about his quality.
There's something about that.
Yeah.
He was so compassionate.
Yeah.
And, just the best.
Yep.
My question, Leo, I'm very familiar with Mac OS and with Windows operating systems, but I've been checking out Chromebooks, you know, the Chrome laptops and Chrome boxes at your recommendation.
Good.
And, checking at the big box stores. But I was told recently that Google makes their own Chrome box and Chrome laptop. I haven't been able to get a hands-on, assessment of their products. I've heard they're a higher price, but that the value, the hardware is very good.
They're
and
excellent.
I'm willing to pay the price.
Well, if you want the best Chromebooks out there, those are the Googles. Now, there's a couple of form factors. Last year, and I have this one, they made the Google Pixel Book, which is just like a real laptop. It's got an attached screen. This year, they released the Pixel Slate, which is a tablet with a detachable keyboard. And I have mixed feelings about that. There is a rumor that Google is about to announce in the next few months. They've got a big developers conference coming up, and that's probably where they'll do it in May, at Google I.O., a new Pixelbook, an updated Pixelbook. The good news is that they seem to be cutting prices right now on the Pixelbook. They're very good prices on the Pixelbooks. Which, when you go to see them, you'll choke because their very good price is still much higher than anybody else's. But I do really, really like them. If you can afford a Pixelbook from Google, I would absolutely get it. If you feel like you want one that's more like a tablet, you could look at the Slate. Google has an online store, store.google.com, where you can at least see those on screen. I'm a fan of the Pixelbook, and I think because it's a year-old design, it's probably a better deal these days. Let me just look and see what they're charging. Yeah, I think it's still a little pricey, unfortunately, but they are really gorgeous machines, well-made, very reliable. $1,000, which is a lot for a Chromebook, for the base model, which is probably enough for anybody. 8 gigs of RAM. That's more RAM than you typically get in a Chromebook, and you will see the benefit of that if you open a lot of tabs on Chrome. 128 gigs SSD is not very big, but remember, part of the premise of the Chromebook is you're storing most of your stuff on Google's Drive in the cloud, so the local storage isn't that important. And it's an i5 processor, and that's another thing Google's done. Most Chromebooks either are ARM or very, very slow Celeron and Atom processors. So you're getting a really fast device, but it is expensive. I mean, it's $1,000.
Well, I'm willing to pay the price if the hardware is excellent.
Oh, it's excellent hardware.
Do you think it's worth waiting a few months for the next model to come out?
That's an interesting question because it's just a rumor, and I don't know how credible a rumor it is. It seems to be somewhat credible. There seems to be evidence that they've got a new code name. So, it, you know, and it would make sense that they didn't update the laptop version of this in 2018, that maybe in 2019 at Google I.O., which is when they often announce these things, that's May 7th, they might announce a new Chromebook. So, yeah, I guess if you can wait, you know, it's not much more than a month. If you can wait the 5 weeks, it might be worth it. On the other hand, actually, it might be worth it for two reasons. One, there's going to be a new one, but two, that means the Pixel books will get even more affordable. You know, they'll drop a couple hundred bucks off of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if you can wait, I mean, I also would look at a much less expense, about half the price, the Samsung Chromebook Pro or Plus. These are very nice Chromebooks, really, really nice Chromebooks, and nothing to sneeze at. I did buy the Pixel book because I like to, you know, I like to try the fastest, bestest hardware, and I have nothing to complain about. It's really nicely designed.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. I'm willing to pay the price if the hardware is well done.
Yeah, and if you need it, and you know, you've heard me talk about the whole notion of a Chromebook. It is limited. It's not a general purpose operating system, but that's its strength. It's more secure as a result. And if it does what you want it to do, which is email, surfing, that kind of thing, I highly recommend this. A lot of people overbuy. They buy too much computer, and a Chromebook is a better choice. So, yeah, I wouldn't hesitate saying look at the Pixel book. I wonder if Best Buy, there might be retail outlets you could see these at, and it'd be really nice to compare them to the Samsung Chromebook Plus, just side by side to see what you get for the extra $500. Appreciate the call. Joe in San Pedro. Hey, Joe.
Hey.
Welcome to the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thanks, Leo. I guess long-time listener, I know not to buy a Fiat.
Good man. All right. Fix it. What is it they stands for? Fix it again, Tony? Is that it?
I don't know.
No. Actually, I've been looking at that electric Fiat. Looks pretty cute. Looks like a martini olive.
Yeah, well, that belongs up on a, you know, in a little show case with all my Franklin Mints.
what can I do for you, Joe?
Okay, this is what's happening.
Yes, sir.
I just retired in February, and I always listen to you at work, so I never got to write down things.
Oh no!
Yeah, you know, I was always punching in numbers.
Yes.
Now I'm in the process of relocating, and I'm in the Apple family. I don't have stock, so, but I'm in the Apple family.
Yes, that's okay, an important distinction, because remember, you're giving them money; they're not giving you money.
I know.
and usually, so if it's Apple, you're giving them a fair share of money.
Yeah, and I'm ready to do that. I have the 26 Retina. I'm an amateur photographer. I haven't had any Photoshop since, CS3 or something like that?
Oh, man.
I have not had the time. But this is what's happening. We're setting up my wife with a new little home office.
Fantastic.
And I want to keep that 26-inch for myself so I could get back into Photoshopping and get a subscription and, you know, so
yeah, because you know the Adobe photography subscription, which is $10, $11 a month, includes Lightroom and Photoshop, and I think that's fairly reasonable given the outright cost of both. That's what I do, and I think that's plenty for me.
I'm going to go that route.
So you have? Do you have the 5K? When you say Retina, is that the 5K iMac?
I'm not sure. It's a few years old.
Yeah. So that is the one I recommend for photography for sure.
Oh, well, I'm going to use what I got. What it is I need to buy my wife, I guess, a laptop because, you know, the big monitors are getting obsolete for home office.
Well, and one of the nice things about a laptop, especially an Apple laptop, is if you say, oh, you know, I wish I did have a bigger monitor, you can always attach a monitor to it or even have a dock. And then, you know, when you get to your office, you plug in the laptop, you can keep it closed, use a keyboard, mouse, and monitor just like it's a desktop. But when you want to go, you unplug it, carry it with you. And these new Thunderbolt 3 ports make that very, very easy. So the good news is you can get a laptop without locking yourself into that size screen.
Oh, great. I had no idea.
Yeah, they make that very easy.
I'm by far not a geek, okay? I'm a blue-collar worker, and I got into computers because of my photography.
Nice.
Because I had to keep up.
Yeah.
So now it's time that I never wrote down how many RAM, how many gigs. I'm a Nikon shooter, and what I'm doing now is, since I became an orphan a year or so ago, we're finding all these 120 negatives.
Oh, wow.
And I've been scanning them with...
Oh, that's cool. So was your mom or dad a photographer?
Well, they thought they were.
Because 120, that's big format. That's high-quality stuff.
Yeah, and I'm really nailing it. You know, what I did was I got really excited and spent, you know, maybe a couple days and said to myself, okay, I got to put this away and save it for my retirement.
Good. Well, here it is. It's nice to have something to do.
Right.
So do you have a budget for her laptop?
I'd like to say no, I don't.
All right. There's two sizes that the Apple laptops come in, 13 and 15. That's right. The size of the screen. Does she like a bigger screen? Does she care? As I said, you can always attach a big one.
We're AARP members.
As am I. So sometimes bigger is easier to read.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the 15.
Bigger is less portable. So if she's carrying it around a lot, that's why people would go with the 13. But if it's going to be on the desk, then absolutely go with the 15. Apple's 15s are beautiful. There really aren't that many choices. That's if you go to the Apple store, one of the things Apple's famous for is lack of choice. And they say that's a good thing. And I kind of agree. It makes it a much simpler. You almost can just say, well, I want to spend this much and then get that laptop. They don't sell MacBook Pros with too little RAM. Some companies will do that as a way to get the price down. But their MacBook Pros come with 16 gigs of RAM. 15 inches, and that's perfect. That's plenty. You don't want more. You don't need less. 16 gigs is fine. Okay. They're expensive. The base model is $23.99, and then if you want a larger hard drive or you want a faster processor, which I wouldn't worry about, you can spend more money. So I would say the base 15-inch is fine. The only issue is storage. It comes with a 256 gig hard drive. These days, for a machine that's kind of scant, but I wouldn't worry about it. You can always attach an external drive if she's not carrying it around, and those are fairly cheap.
I got multiple.
So I wouldn't worry about that. What you'll find, though, with these new MacBooks is all they have for connectors is these new Thunderbolt connectors, these Type-C connectors. So you'll either be... I would suggest getting a dock, and there are a number of very good docks. I use one from a company called HyperDrive that just plugs into the side, and it lets you attach, you know, the traditional Type-A USB drives as well as power it. But there are more elaborate docks as well. Apple doesn't sell anything particularly, but there are plenty of choices. So I would say, almost anything you'd want to do, including your photography. Apple's displays are gorgeous. The 15-inch MacBook Pro... With the base model processor, which is a 6-core i7, that's pretty darn fast. 16 gigs of RAM is plenty. Do not upgrade the graphics card. That's not necessary. That'll save you $100. And then whatever storage you feel you need. The base model might be a little scant, but you can add a little more if you want. You just pay more money, right? Chris Marquardt is here, and it's time. Chris, hello. Leo Laporte, the tech
guy. Hi there.
Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. It's time to review our assignment.
Yes, the Ant assignment, which was fun because it was a bit different. Normally we have a concept, something a bit more abstract that people can put meaning into. And this time it was a very pretty much precise assignment, take a picture from an ant's perspective.
Oh, and I missed it once again. I promised I was going to do it. I feel terrible. But that's okay because we got some nice entries, and you've picked three to talk about on the radio.
Exactly. As usual, I've picked a few. And the first one is by Rick Johnson. A Picnic from an Ant's Perspective is the title. And he writes, high-tech special effects used. And initially, I thought, what's that stuff in the way? So what we're looking at is a picnic table.
Yeah.
With picnic things on it. And initially, I thought, what are those out-of-focus things in the front? But of course, it's the feelers of the ant.
Oh.
So it's an ant looking.
I get it. He's looking there down on it.
Well, now I wish it was taken more from below, but yeah, then maybe the ant is on another picnic table next by.
That's what's
going on. Nearby.
That's what's going on, yeah.
But just including those close out of focus feelers in the photo sells the shot. So
that's hysterical. And I won't mention it, but he's got bug spray on the table along with his food. So be careful. Be careful, ant. Be careful.
And he took the photo with a smartphone, which tells us that it doesn't have to be.
No.
Doesn't have to be the big expensive camera.
It ain't the phone. It ain't the camera. It's the photographer, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And in this next one, the photographer is front and center.
Yeah, I found this one interesting as well because Gerald Wiley put himself in the shot. So he's taking this photo with something. There's no EXIF data in this one, so I can't tell. But it's looking up, as an ant would do. And then he's in the photo himself, taking a photo of the ant. So you
really
see
like
a big
camera
lens,
yeah,
and he included himself. And perfect shot, wonderful, gives a lot of context. It's clearly from an ant's perspective.
And a lot of whimsy. And, you know, it's beautiful. The birch tree and the beautiful flowers, the poppies. It's really a nice shot. I really like that. Fun.
It's got all these different, like, areas. I mean, if you look at this as a 2D photo, it's got pretty much three distinctive areas. It's got the flowers in the right bottom. It's got the photographer on the left. And then in the top, there's the tree. And so
nice,
it's very clearly structured.
Yeah.
And I like structure in photos.
Yeah.
So this one
cool
works well. And then, last but not least, another one where the photographer included himself. Tom Downing titles this "What the Last Thing the Ant Sees."
The last thing.
Well, you see an ant. Well, from an ant's perspective, and this is really from very low down. You see this being really close to the floor, and you see the sole of a shoe right before it comes crushing down on you.
Oh no.
Ah, well, but then I guess some ants have that happening to them. Normally, those ants don't have cameras with them, but
no, last
in
shot.
This case, yeah,
I love it.
All right, so that's the three I picked, and of course, I brought a new assignment, which this time is going to be a bit different because you know we have a discussion forum on Flickr where people post their photos. So there's a discussion area. And Renee Silverman, our moderator, has put up a topic to allow people in the group to submit their own ideas for an assignment. And I wanted to make this more of a community effort anyway. So this is perfect. And people are participating and people submit their ideas. And everyone who's listening to this, who is part of the Flickr group or the Tech Guy Flickr group, by all means, submit your ideas in there. I look in there regularly. And now here's one we received by user 999 Photos by Ari. And Ari writes, "I know I'm getting into blasphemy territory, but do they have to be abstract ideas?" And you know how many of the assignments were quite abstract, so you could really put a lot of different meanings in them. But what Ari suggests here is to try something completely different, and that is
now remember,
to be as literal
before you say this, I'm going to be in Hawaii for the next couple of weeks. Make
well,
it something I can do.
You can.
Okay.
Because Ari suggested to be very literal and take a picture of an apple. Not the idea of an apple, not what you could put into that, what Minion could put into this, but an actual apple. And I think this is a good idea because everyone will still approach this in a different way. There will be different compositions. There will be different lighting. There will be some people might go shopping to the grocery store to get a really beautiful apple, a really photogenic apple with an interesting texture or something. And I think this is good.
Yeah.
This is a good thing to have something very literal. So an apple, literally just an apple.
Not a Mac, Apple Mac.
No. Apple, as in the fruit. And put some effort in it. Don't just go and
not a pineapple, right? It's got to be an apple. Apple.
An apple. Apple.
Oh boy!
And I think you should be able to find an apple in Hawaii.
Yeah, imported.
Shouldn't be too hard.
An imported apple.
Well, that's still an apple.
Okay. No, I'm going to do it. I love the idea, and I have a bunch of cameras I'm bringing with me. Last time I went on a trip, Chris said, "Oh, do something interesting. Just bring." One camera, one lens. That was.
And you still hate me for it, right?
I still hate you for it. No, it was great. Mm-hmm. I got great images, and I really enjoyed doing it that way. I was very happy. But this time, I think I'm going to bring a fuller kit. I'm going to bring my. I was telling you off the air, the Sony A9 just got a big firmware update. That's the camera that my wife splurged on for me, and I'm very grateful to her. So I think I'll bring that. And you know, because of your book, I've been doing a lot of wide angle, and I have a lens I love for that Sony, a 24-millimeter lens. It's just one of my favorites. So I think it's going to be my go-to lens, especially for street photography.
That sounds cool.
People. Yeah.
That sounds perfect.
Maybe even for apples. So now I'm trying to decide. I have a few others I could bring. Should I bring some others? Maybe just go with a 24. I don't know. It was a great exercise to just bring a 50-millimeter lens. I had a lot of fun with it.
Well. This time I'll leave the decision entirely to you.
Well, it's a little bit skewed because I also have the new Samsung S10 with three lenses built into the camera,
including
an incredible wide angle. That's like a 16-millimeter, pretty wide. So I guess I'll take a few with that as well. So that's great. Chris, we will have a month to take a picture of an apple. You know, I kind of like this idea because I can't wait to see how people find different angles on this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You guys are so creative. Here's how it works with these contests. It's not a contest. It's not even a competition. It's an assignment. It's a chance for you, an excuse for you to go out and take pictures. You could submit up to one Apple picture a week over the next 4 weeks. Then Chris will pick three and review them. You submit them to our tech guy group on Flickr. It's free to join. Free to join Flickr. You do need a Flickr account to do that. And Renee Silverman's the moderator. You'll know you're in the right group because there's like 11,000 people in it, many, many pictures. Let's see those Apple pictures. We'll start submitting them to the Tech Guy group on Flickr starting today for the next month. Chris Marquardt's at discoverthetopfloor.com. That's where he leads his photo workshops. You can find his images. Look for his videos, too, on YouTube. He's got some great stuff. And we'll see you next week. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I am a Mac guy. I have an iMac Pro, that really expensive iMac, on my desk at home. As I'm wandering about, carry a MacBook Air, the latest MacBook Air, which I really like. I'm sitting in front of a 5K iMac right now. But, you know, in order to do this show, I have to use more than just Macs, and I use PCs, too. I have quite a few PCs. And my last PC purchase, it was a few years ago, was a Lenovo ThinkPad Yoga, which I really like. That was the second generation. That was, I think, 2015, and it's served me well, but as I go off on this vacation, I thought I need a new laptop. I had purchased the high-end MacBook Pro, and I really didn't like the keyboard. It was the i9. Fortunately, my son, who's a video editor, needed something with a little more horsepower, so he's inherited that, but I needed something for photography, something with a great screen, a lot of horsepower, a lot of RAM, a lot of storage. And while I was thinking of waiting to see what the Huawei MateBook Pro looked like, the very good, nice machine I'd used last year's version of it, I decided to opt for a Lenovo ThinkPad again, because I'm a big fan of the ThinkPad. Not a Yoga this time. I don't need that crazy screen that goes all the way around and that makes those hinges a little bit creaky. So I decided to go for a Workstation X1, the ThinkPad X1 Extreme. Thin, light, strong, expensive. MacBook expensive. You know, it's funny, once you get used to spending Apple prices, you get so much more for the same price on a PC. And I was, you know, comparing this to the 15-inch MacBook Pro, same size screen. It's a very good screen on the Lenovo. They have a super high-res, super high-quality screen. So I opted for that. And I got a little more RAM than I would typically get on a MacBook. I got 32 gigs because I know Windows likes memory. And one of the nice things about this ThinkPad Extreme is it has two bays for drives. So I got two drives in it, lots of storage, i7 processor, six cores. So I'll let you know. I get it just before I leave, but I'll have to do my review after I get back. And we were talking a little bit about this yesterday. I honestly think that Windows 10 is pretty much as usable for almost everything as a Macintosh. And if you use Adobe products, it's identical. So I'm looking forward to it. I'll give you a full review on the ThinkPad X1 Extreme, which they came out with at the end of last year, when I get back from my trip. On we go with the show. John in Connecticut. Hello, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Good to hear from you.
Hey, nice to hear from you.
I wanted to talk to you about my iTunes library, but after listening to Chris, what do you think? You think it's about time to get re-engaged with a drone and get that top Apple?
Oh, man, I'm never doing another drone again. Are you kidding me?
Well, not at all. I just want to be there to find it.
Well, I know there's one in the bottom of the Caribbean right now, that Mavic Pro. I really liked the Mavic, too. It was really fun to drive. And actually, what happened is I got cocky. I was very careful, used it carefully on the land, because my history with drones is not good. And I thought, oh, this one, you can't crash this one. It's amazing. But it's like you can't sink the Titanic. They should never say can't crash to Leo Laporte. And I decided I thought it'd be fun to have a picture of us in the boat sailing through the Caribbean. Little did I know those winds and the guy wires. And anyway, the drone, long story short, is in the drink. What can I do for you?
Those are those guy wires that they're
getting. The guy wires got me because they're thin. They're holding up the mast and stuff, and I didn't see it, and the drone didn't either. And kablooey. So what can I do to help you?
Over the years, I've managed to really screw up my iTunes library, and not a big fan of iTunes anymore.
You're not alone, by the way. That's a universal experience. Go ahead.
Oh, I know, I know. I remember my timing guess is bad, but a couple years ago, Andy and you guys were talking about when they first came out with, I think it was maybe Google first, and then Amazon.
Yeah.
And now there's two versions of Apple, but if I were going to pick one of those to upload, ultimately, at that time anyway, you could upload them. It would do the music match.
Yep.
You would be able to download them at some point, and
yep,
they would be playable even if you didn't maintain a subscription.
Yep, that's iTunes Match. That's $25 a year. Still a really good deal. I think you don't have to buy Apple Music to do that. Just $25 a year. You have to own the songs. They have to be on your hard drive. They'll get matched up to the cloud. You can delete them from your hard drive, re-download them. They'll upgrade them to high-quality AACs. I think they're 320. No, they're 256 kilobit AACs. They'll eliminate any copy protection if there should be some, because you know in iTunes they used to sell with copy protection. It's a really good service. Occasionally makes mistakes. My pal Jim Dalrymple, who's an avid music fan, writes for The Loop at loopinsight.com. He had been complaining bitterly about Apple Music Match making mistakes, and it just happened to him again, where it replaced some live versions of songs with studio versions or vice versa. He wasn't happy about that. The Match technology is not perfect, but it's pretty darn good. So that's a good deal. Neither Google nor Amazon offer anything like iTunes Match.
Okay.
But they do offer unlimited storage of your uploaded music, or nearly unlimited. For most people, it would be unlimited. I think Google limits you to 50,000 songs. If you have an Amazon Prime subscription, it's, I think, literally unlimited.
I do. Another part of my problem is that I'm not sure how I did it. I have an idea. Making compilations discs over the year, burning several different artists to the same CD and then importing it so I would have that playlist. Well, the names of the songs didn't come back. So I probably have about 2,000 songs like as track one.
Yeah, the worst.
The Music Match won't do anything with those, will it?
That's a really interesting question. I don't know how much it relies. Yeah, probably it does rely on your metadata being accurate. However, there are some excellent programs that you can use to try to recover the information about those songs. I know I hate it when that happens.
Well, early Siri, you could play a portion, and it would do a pretty good job telling it.
You can still do that, and there's programs to do that. Apple actually bought Shazam, which was the best-known program, and I think they've incorporated that into Siri, so it should still be able to do that. But you don't want to do that for thousands of songs.
No. Given the numbers, I was wondering if Match might actually be able to do that.
That's a good question. I'm sure it uses the extended information. Because otherwise it would have to match it sonically. You know, it would have to look at the waveforms. It wouldn't have to play it, obviously, but it would have to look at the contents of the file.
Yeah. It dropped the name, so I don't know if it dropped all of the meta, because these are just...
Yeah, the metadata might still be there. Yeah. The file name is not as important. I'm looking at iTunes Match to see how they do. It's limited to 100,000 songs. Unmatched content is uploaded as is. I want to know how you match, though, Apple. What do you do? What do you do to match it? And they're not very forthcoming in how their technology works.
I'll keep an eye on the chat room.
Maybe we can find out.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Either way, I think I'm better off. I'm better off doing that. And then if I download it into its own and backed up separate hard drive, just so I have, it will play as long as I maintain the subscription.
Yeah. No, you don't have to. For iTunes Match, no subscription. It's yours now. If you want to stream them, you have to maintain it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it retrieves music information, but the question is what it uses to retrieve that information. If it just uses the extended information and the file name and stuff like that, which I bet it does. I doubt it actually looks into the file. I'm sure it uses the MP3 tags and the file name and nothing else. But that's a good question. I don't know. Sean in Tucson, Arizona. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sean's going to correct me, too. Let's get Leo straight here. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, Leo. I just wanted to tell you that Hawaii has a indigenous apple.
Oh, what's it like?
It's a mountain. They call it a mountain apple. It's actually a native of Malaysia.
Ah.
And you probably best chance get it in the farmers markets. And it needs lots of water, and Kauai will give you that.
Oh, yeah. It looks very different. You know, this is a good... Oh, because, you know, this apple is... The reason talking about this is the apple is the assignment of the month from Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Take a picture of an actual apple. This doesn't look anything like the apples we get here in the States. So it'll be a great image. Everybody go, wait a minute, that's not an apple. And I'll say, no, that's Syzygium malacensis, a species of flowering tree native to Malaysia and Australia. I love it. It's a mountain apple.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Hawaii, and we used to pick them when we were going on hikes. And
can you eat them?
Yeah.
They look funny.
Yeah, you can even cook with them.
They look like dates almost.
Yeah, well, some of them are bigger. You know, it depends.
Are they sweet?
That was too long ago.
When you're young, everything is sweet.
That was in the 50s.
Hey, I appreciate that, Sean. I will be looking. Which island did you grow up on?
I grew up in Honolulu.
Nice. I will be looking for some some of those special Hawaiian mountain apples for my picture. Look for that on our Flickr group. Maybe you'll see some images. Thanks to you.
Right.
Hey, I appreciate it. Take care. 8888 Ask Leo. Anybody else want to correct me? How about Margaret in Washington, D.C.? Margaret's next. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be able to talk to you. I've listened to your program for, good golly, I'm sure a decade at least.
Thank you.
I have a, yes, it's been an honor. And
I'm the honor. Thank you. That's very nice of you.
Yeah, education is everything when it comes to IT, so you don't go down the wrong path.
Is this your business? Well, Are you in IT?
Well, here's the thing. I right now work at a large transportation, a passenger train company, which I'd like to not name.
No need to name it. We probably could figure it out, given that you're in Washington, D.C., and not Kansas City.
There you go.
Go ahead.
There you go. So anyway, we are in the process of redesigning the intranet for our employees. And we have been given Salesforce by the IT department as the tool to make this work.
Yeah. Salesforce is like, did you ever hear the saying, nobody ever got fired by buying IBM?
Yes.
Same thing.
Uh-huh.
It's the no-brainer, obvious choice because everybody uses it. If it's the whether it's the best for you, I don't know. But
well, here's
they gave it to you.
Oh yeah, they bought an enterprise version, and so anything that anybody comes knocking on the door of IT and says we have to do something, they say, "Hey, the answer's Salesforce."
Right.
Well, the issue is this: we need to be repurposing, transitioning and repurposing content off of our current intranet
right.
into the new tool.
Yeah.
Now, in order to do that, it's called knowledge articles within the module called community.
Okay.
That's the terminology that Salesforce uses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the crazy part is that in order to build a knowledge article, you use an editor that's built, that's part of the knowledge article community service cloud. There's all these naming layers.
You can't use just like a word processor or anything else, a text editor. Yeah.
Well, yeah. You, in order to get it into the platform, you got to use the built-in editor that comes with Salesforce that they called the editor for knowledge articles.
Yeah.
That's how you deal with creating a document that you want people to be able to find, of course.
Yeah, this is really common in non-open solutions because, they're closed means they want you to use their tools and no other. And they're probably doing some sort of internal markup that Salesforce understands. But I take it you're not fond of this editor.
What we're doing, sorry to overtalk. What we're doing is we're working with PDF documents. Most of our content is in a PDF document
right.
or a Word document
right.
or an Excel spreadsheet.
Right.
We're literally cutting and pasting that into the editor. But when you do that, it's not compatible with Microsoft at all. So you're pretty much working from ground zero once you get the content of the article into the knowledge article editor tool. And so it's taking this huge amount of time reformatting the article so that it's comprehensible. It's got the proper headings and, indentations and, the section numbering and all that kind of stuff. We have to redo that.
Ugh. Yeah, and you've already got it nicely formatted in those PDFs or the Microsoft documents.
Right.
I'm looking at Salesforce's own documentation for importing. And, they want you to convert it to a CSV file. Which is, of course,
explain that laugh.
That's the lowest possible common denominator. That's basically treating it as a database and eliminating all formatting. So that's not good. What you really want, and I'm looking for this, is a way to import PDF files directly, preserving the carefully formatted file as it was. And, you know, remember, Mark Benioff at Salesforce hates Microsoft. I'm not at all surprised to know that there's no, you know, importer, which would be, of course, in any normal project, the obvious thing to do. I am not an expert in Salesforce, so I don't know an answer. But I tell you what, Margaret, keep listening, because there's lots of people doing this, and they probably have a way to do it. And you have to use Salesforce, I take it.
Before I was hired, I started there at the end of October of last year. Before I was hired, the people in my department who were responsible for redoing the intranet,
they chose it.
Went to IT. Well, they didn't really know what to do, so they went to IT and they said, you know, we have to redo this. We need a good tool. The current intranet is old and it's not, people can't find the stuff. People hate it.
Well, you need a good intranet. That's the internal network that is really important for any business.
Absolutely.
There are a lot of choices. Salesforce is a customer relationship management tool that has all sorts of modules and widgets. And if your business is a Salesforce business, and maybe it is, it might make sense to use Salesforce. The problem is this, and it's one pain point, is getting the old data format into the new data format. To be fair to Salesforce, once you've done that, It is a good solution, and you're going to have all sorts of flexibility. It's going to import stuff from your other Salesforce modules much more easily. It seems to me a bad thing that Salesforce doesn't have a high-quality PDF importer. So maybe we can find somebody who's written a third-party version of that. Because cutting and pasting, you know, obviously it works, but you lose all the formatting. You're only getting the text. So it seems that we should be able to do a better job. I don't know how to do that. It's once you're done, it's going to be great. That's all I can.
It's just the bottom line is very labor intensive.
Yeah, of course it is.
You might imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, when you paste in, you know, a 5, 7, 10 page document into this editor, you have got a lot of work ahead of you to tab and to, you know, reformat. That's what we're doing.
And I see a lot of people complaining about converting. This is something everybody wants to do. Here's on the Salesforce Trailblazer community a thread. I cannot believe this is still not available. We really need this. We would certainly appreciate such a possibility, as it would enable us to upload our product manuals into the knowledge base. It's impossible. Please. So
there you go.
So you're not alone. I don't know of a way. Maybe somebody in the audience has a clever tool. Keep listening or check the website, techguylabs.com, after the fact. Sometimes people are listening but can't get to the phone, but they can put it in our show notes at techguylabs.com. There's a comment section there. That does seem like a simple thing to do, but it is a known fact that Salesforce doesn't currently have a way to do that. All right, we're going to keep working. See if we can find it. Boz has found a website, docparser.com, that says they have PDS Salesforce integration. We'll see if we can find it. Docparser.com. Automatically copy data from PDF to Salesforce. What? Native Salesforce integration. Push your data from PDF to Salesforce with DocParser. I don't know if it'll work with knowledge. Our next caller, Penny in Seal Beach. Hi, Penny.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
What's up?
Well, I have an issue with trying to download the scanner driver to my computer. The printer works on the same piece of equipment, but the scanner keeps coming up with an error. So the other day what I did is I just scanned to a flash drive.
Yeah.
So when I did that, I have legal documents and letter size in one whole package, and it didn't scan the legal. It scanned them, but it cut the legal off. It didn't even print.
Did you use the sheet feeder to do that?
Yes, I did, but it's going to the drive. flash drive.
Yeah, but the cutoff may be that the scanner sensed the 8.5 by 11 and just kind of scanned everything the same way. Maybe if you separated the piles into legal and 8.5 by 11, it would work better.
I tried it again with legal paper.
Yeah.
To print, and it still wouldn't print the full document on the legal paper. It cut it off what is it, 11?
Yeah. What kind of scanner?
A Brother.
Okay. I'm not familiar with their scanners, so I don't know if there's a setting that you have to set. There may be that says this is because the way the scanner works, it's a camera and it goes down and back. And if it doesn't know it's a legal size, it may not go all the way to the end and back. It may just say, oh, I'm just going to get the first 11 inches. So there may be a set. I'm just guessing, but there may be a setting in there. The issue of the driver is another issue entirely. What operating system are you using?
Windows 10.
And they have, for that Brother printer all-in-one, they have a Windows 10 driver?
Yeah, it's let me, I can print from my...
Well, make sure, though, that the driver is a Windows 10 driver, not that it says for Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you can print doesn't mean you can scan. They're actually opposite directions. So they don't necessarily mean it's the same...
That's what happened.
Scanning is a little more tricky to get working because the printer has to be controlled by the computer. The computer has to say, okay, I've put the document in, and then it warms up, and then it goes, all right, let's scan it. So you're kind of the printer's responding to these requests and then sends the printer data. So it's quite a bit different. I would make sure you have the right driver. We have a link in the show notes for the specific Brother page for that Windows 10 printer driver and scanner driver. What happens when you install it? It just doesn't work?
It comes up with an error and it says it's not able to download it.
Yeah. And you're connected via USB or are you connected via Wi-Fi?
I've done both.
Okay. USB will be easier, but yeah, if it supports both, it should work. Yeah, it's hard. I can't really help you with that because I don't know what's going on. I think that's a call to Brother. I hate to say it. I don't know if I can give you any further direction. I would look at the settings, make sure when you're scanning, you've told it, I'm scanning legal. Please take it all. Paul in Great Falls, Virginia. I think we got him now. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
I'm peachy.
Peachy. Peach Keen, what's up?
You betcha. So wanted to let you know, I got the Helm, that wonderfully designed email server.
It looks like a pyramid, and they are an advertiser on the podcast, I should mention. Yeah, I'm using a Helm, too. What do you think?
Well, I wanted to let you know that it has some issues. As with most products, they can have issues. That's not the concern. I did want to compliment them, though, that great, and they helped me basically fix some issues on their end, reset the Helm and start all over, and now...
Oh, good. And it's working okay now?
You know. It's working okay now, and I thought I'd let you know that they give good support, and as your friend Steve Gibson says, everyone can make a mistake. It's how you handle it that counts.
That's right. So the Helm is an interesting idea. It's a company selling a bit of hardware. It's very nicely designed. It looks like a kind of a triangle that you put in your house, and you can run an email server from your home. Actually, they have expanded it now. You can also run Nextcloud, which is a really nice open source file sharing, notepad taking. There's actually a lot you can do with Nextcloud. They've just added that capability too. So it really is a home data server. The idea being, now that people are concerned about privacy, maybe it's better not to store your email on a public server, but on a server that you keep encrypted and you keep at home. And was that your motivation for getting it, Paul? Was it a privacy concern or you just wanted to try it?
A little of both. Wanted a little privacy. I have my own consulting business, so I thought it'd be good to have my own email server rather than rely on Google or AOL or anyone like that.
And I'm really pleased that they've added Nextcloud because I think, of course, now the next step will be to add more storage. It still has It has 128 gigs, but I'd like to see a terabyte or two on there. And they say they plan to do that as well. Good. Well, I'm glad that they fixed it, and the reset fixed everything, and it's all working now, and you're getting your email, and everything's flowing.
And I'm able to do multiple email addresses, so I'm going to take your advice, and whenever I hand one out, I'll know who's giving my email address.
That's what I do now. That's exactly how I use it. So I have a custom email address that I've been using. And, of course, if it's Leo at that address, then I know it's to me. But if I sign up for something, when I created a Verizon account, I made the email be Verizon at my custom email address. And that way if I get – and so far, by the way, I have to say, nobody's sold that address yet, which kind of surprises me. I've been doing this for several months. I thought for sure I'd be getting a lot of spam. Maybe companies are wising up that we don't want our email address sold anymore.
I hope you're right. Now, if they can work on the spam calling.
Oh, man, is that a problem, the robocalls. Yeah. I think there's a solution afoot, this shaken and stirred solution, shaken and stir. But the FCC has to really require companies to do it. Verizon did do the right thing just this week. They announced that their $3 a month call screening service was now free to all Verizon customers. So I think that's at least all postpaid or prepaid Verizon customers. I think that's a really good thing.
That should do it.
Well, I'm really glad to know, Paul, it's working okay. And keep me in touch. Keep me posted on it because, of course, we do ads for them, but that doesn't mean that they're perfect. And I'd like to know if in any respect they are less than perfect for you.
Will do. And W6TWT 73 from Keith. K3 Mike Zed.
Bye bye. That's my W6TWT. that's my unused ham call sign. I like it. It's really nice. The TWT comes from our podcast network, This Week in Tech. And so W6TWT. I haven't used it on the air much because I talk on the radio all day. Then during the week, I do podcasts all day at twit.tv, you know, tech podcasts. By the time I get home, the last thing I want to do is talk. But then on the other hand, you know, remember Art Bell, the great broadcaster, coast-to-coast host, the hostess with the mostest? He'd get off the air, sign on to his ham shack and perump, and he'd talk to people for hours afterwards. I don't have that much in me. I'm afraid. Let's see. Next is Jesse in Los Angeles. Hi, Jesse.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's going great. How are you?
Good, good. Well, I had a couple questions. I have some old machines laying around, you know, old laptops that I don't really use anymore. And I was interested in kind of maybe if I should, like, start mining Bitcoin with them. I'm not really sure, you know, if it'll be profitable or, you know.
I can promise you it won't. And I'll tell you why. Bitcoin, that's the cryptocurrency, and I'm sure everybody's heard the term Bitcoin. And just a brief Bitcoin explainer. You know, currency, like dollar bills, are frankly all what we call fiat currency. They're based on a belief that they're worth something. A dollar bill is a piece of paper. It actually isn't worth anything, but because we all agree that it is. And we even agree kind of what it's worth. You know, if I show you a phone, a late model Apple iPhone, and say it'll be $2, you know that's wrong. It's more like maybe $1,000. So we kind of agree on the value of things. But all of it is agreement. None of it is real. We're not giving each other things of value. In fact, even if you were using gold, the value of gold, the price of gold, way exceeds its industrial value. That's even a fiat currency based on faith. So about 10, 15 years ago, a person or persons named Satoshi Nakamoto said, well, you know what? It doesn't have to be government-backed to work, and invented Bitcoin, very complicated, very sophisticated, a cryptographically backed currency, which is widely used now. And as long as we agree it's got value and agree what the value is, that's great. But one of the things he did that was brilliant, and I'm going to say he, even though we don't know who it is, could be a she, could be a group, we don't know. One of the things Satoshi did that was brilliant was he wants to generate a certain amount of Bitcoin, but he wants to make it harder and harder to generate. And this is why you can't just use a beat-up old PC to generate Bitcoin. It might, I mean, you can run the software, But the problem, in order to generate Bitcoin, you have to solve a mathematical problem. The problems are getting more and more difficult. And they're so difficult now that you need a lot of horsepower and even a lot of electrical power. And that's the problem, is because we're late in the stage of Bitcoin, the amount of electricity needed to generate Bitcoin almost certainly exceeds the amount of money you're going to make doing it.
Well, that's kind of where I was going with this, is because I'm part-time. Well, not part-time, but like I'm an electrician. So
do you have free power?
I wanted to set up some solar panel arrays.
Okay.
And, you know, get
okay.
Some,
Then it might make sense.
Kind of like a fun project, you know?
Yeah, then it might make sense. Just don't expect – it's going to – read up on it. The proof of work is really tough now. People are doing very fancy stuff, and it's almost universally done by places where the cost of electricity is near zero. Most Bitcoin miners now are in China. We believe it's the Chinese government, and they're not paying for electricity at all. There's cost to cooling, because – there's a lot of generated heat, so it's not merely going to be the cost to run those computers, but you're going to be doing so much work that the heat generated in that server room is very high, so a lot of it is cooling. Most Bitcoin miners are living near hydroelectric facilities. It is really hard, but read more about it.
What kind of on a single computer? They don't do it on single computers anymore.
In fact, for a while it was one of the reasons you couldn't get a graphics processor. It's because they were buying up NVIDIA, but now those even aren't fast enough. You have to have custom silicon to compete, custom ASICs. And this is all the intent. This is all Satoshi's design, which is kind of impressive. But at this point, mining Bitcoin probably isn't economically feasible. Our show today brought to you by our fine sponsor and somebody you must be using by now. Goodness knows I've been telling you about them for a long time. I've been using them for even longer, more than a decade. You know what I'm talking about? LastPass. LastPass is a password manager everyone needs. We all have too many passwords. And the problem is the way we deal with that. Most of the time, the way people solve the problem of passwords is not the right way, but the wrong way, the easy way. They make up passwords that are easy to remember. They use passwords again and again. These are very dangerous behaviors. If a site gets cracked and they get your password, they can get into all those other sites. And passwords that are easy to remember are almost always easy to brute force. You need to generate long, strong, cryptographically secure passwords, and then you need to store it in a cryptographically secure container. That's, in a nutshell, what LastPass does. Now, LastPass has been around a long time, and so they have a lot of nice additional features, including the ability to generate passwords, the ability to use two-factor authentication, highly recommended. We use LastPass at work because not only do I want to be secure with my passwords, but I know our employees have access to our databases, our bank accounts, our websites, our everything. And I want them to be secure as well, right? Because the last thing you want is a breach. So we make sure they use LastPass Enterprise, and we make sure they do it right because there are over 100 policies, including, and we insist on this, two-factor authentication. We have minimum standards for the LastPass password, master password. We have all sorts of great ways of restricting, including in some cases, employees, for instance, who have access to our bank accounts, don't actually get the password. They click a link in LastPass that logs them in, but they never see the password. That means they can't share it. And by the way, one thing we do know is employees share passwords, sometimes often with people not even at the same place of work. You got to have LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager, trusted by over 43,000 businesses. LastPass has 13.5 million regular users, too. It's the best password solution for you and your team, whether it's LastPass Premium for individuals, LastPass Family. That's what we use at home. Makes it easy to share passwords with my wife. She's also my designated emergency access. That's really important. LastPass supports that if anything should happen to you. They've got lots of precautions, but she can get access to my passwords if I'm incapacitated. That's LastPass Families. There's also LastPass for teams of 50 or fewer, and the LastPass Enterprise. That's what we use. They have a great authenticator app, which sends push notifications, doesn't give you 6-digit numbers. That's great. Our employees love to use that. I actually use my LastPass with a YubiKey, and this is the ultimate in security, the YubiKey is a cryptographically secure key store that is a one-time password for LastPass. That's awesome. You got to use LastPass. If you've got passwords, and who doesn't these days, you got to have LastPass. Another reason I love it is it's the first app I install on my new ThinkPad when I get it on Friday. First thing I do is install LastPass. On any new phone, LastPass. And that facilitates, with its auto-filling, logging into all the other apps and getting all the other stuff set up. So it to me, LastPass is key. You find out more about LastPass. Join the 13.5 million LastPass users, including everybody at Twit, at LastPass.com/Twit. Thank you, LastPass, for making a great product and for supporting our Tech Guy podcast. LastPass.com/Twit. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, winding up the weekend. Thanks to Big Pee Wee. He's our great musical director, picking the hits all week long for us. Thanks to Kim Schaffer, the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer, for answering all your calls. Thanks most of all to you for listening. We'll be back next week. And a little reminder, a little personal plug, if you don't mind. If you get a hankering for more tech information during the week, we talk about things like Bitcoin and smartphones and cryptographically secure passwords and all that stuff on our podcast network, my podcast network. It's called Twit, which just, I know it's a, it, I know it's, I am a Twit. I admit it. That's my name. It stands for This Week in Tech, but I think also we're kind of Twits because we're all into this geeky stuff. You can find all of our shows at twit.tv. We've got shows for Mac lovers, for iOS users, Windows lovers, Windows Weekly for security interested, security-minded folks, Security Now. Lots of great shows. Twit.tv. Give them a try. I think you'll enjoy them. If you want more geekery all week long. And, of course, all the tech news, too. In fact, later this afternoon, we'll record our namesake show, the news roundtable we call This Week in Tech. And you can watch that live at twit.tv/live. Jeff Santa Anna, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Leo. Can you hear me now?
I hear you fine. Thanks for calling
in. Thanks for taking my call. I'm going really retro for you. My father was a World War II veteran and electrical engineer.
Nice.
And he always told me, do not give up your landline. Well, not many people have them nowadays.
I've said the same thing. And why he said that was, back in the day, the reason that Ma Bell got a monopoly is because the country wanted, and I think quite rightly so, to have an absolute reliable communication network, especially in case of emergencies. So your old-fashioned phone line, I know you know this, but I'm going to tell everybody, your old-fashioned phone line, the one that doesn't plug into the plug socket but just into the phone jack, that phone is powered by the phone company. So if the power goes out, if there's a disaster, it will still work. You can still call for help. And that's why your dad, quite rightly, said, keep that landline. Unfortunately, those days are gone. Ma Bell's no longer a monopoly. And the phone companies have slowly been, and in some cases illegally, cutting the copper to your house. And that means for many people, that old-fashioned landline powered by the central office is no longer an option.
Yes, there was central office with the old mechanical switching and then ESF.
Yeah. Those were the days.
Radio operator, so am I, you know, that bit of a nerd. But,
well, thank goodness for amateur radio, by the way, because that is something that will continue to work in emergencies. Hams spend a lot of time. They have field days. They spend a lot of time getting trained. And when emergencies happens, things like Hurricane Katrina, hams step up. Those amateur radio operators do become a very vital communication backbone. So we are very lucky to have those great amateur radio operators like you throughout the country.
Thank you. So in the meantime, other than ham and, you know, picking up a repeater somewhere or you know, duplex or simplex, what do you recommend for a phone? I'm not proud to say this. I'm disabled. I'm the last person to call 911. But if I have to,
no, you need it. This is important.
I was a first responder for years, and I don't.
Well, you know that.
Want to call?
Did you become disabled in the line of work?
Yes.
I am so sorry, and I thank you for your sacrifice.
My pleasure. I wish I was still doing it.
Oh man. Well,
my pleasure.
I am. You know. I tear up every time I think about those first responders who, while everybody's running away from disaster, you guys run to it.
And we got to help a lot of people.
Yeah.
Some were needless, senseless calls. I got to help a lot of people. There's nothing more rewarding than that.
Well, we're very, very grateful. And I'm sorry that you got disabled. However, we are not anymore in this magical time when you could rely on any phone company, I'm sorry to say.
Like you said, no copper, no landline.
Well, I would check, you know.
VoIP or internet.
Yeah, I would check. You might, you know, it just really is a case-by-case basis. You might check. Who's your incumbent there? Is it AT&T or Frontier?
Well, this line I borrowed is Sprint. I was using Verizon because back in the day when I used to travel, they had the biggest footprint, so I used them.
But who? Verizon. Not your cell carrier. Although honestly, probably the answer is your cell carrier. But your landline. Who operates landlines in your neighborhood?
Gosh, you know, I forgot. I did give it up. I hated to, but they charged me long distance to call a city next door. They called it local long distance.
Yes,
I would call to talk to my parents when they were still alive, and they charged me 9 cents a minute.
Isn't that crazy?
And it's literally a couple miles away. It's crazy.
They got to make their money somehow. It is possible, and I don't want to deprecate this. In a lot of localities all over the country, you can still get that powered by the central office landline. So if you're disabled, they, by the way, will have Lifeline service for you. Now, what I would recommend is you don't make phone calls on it. That is your. I have one at home. That's your 911 phone.
Okay.
And the reason you use that, because it's a landline, they know where you are. You don't even have to speak. You pick it up, you dial 911, don't say anything. They will send an officer out. You know this.
Oh. Okay.
So that's important. And because it's 911, real 911, they know your location. Now, what the FCC's done because of the proliferation of cell services, they've got a new E911, and that's required. All cell companies have to support it. You'll note when you sign up for your cell, you have to give a land address that you use it most commonly at. And they now can use, they're starting to be able to do this in all of the call centers, all the 911 call centers, get GPS information from the phone. And that could be very valuable. So if you can't get a landline that is, you know, power, the problem with a cell phone, it will work if the power goes out, unless it goes out at the cell site or at the cell company. But it will work if you don't have local power. So it may be a good second alternative. I would still call the phone company and say, I need Lifeline service. I'm disabled. That should be cheap. It should be cheap. And ask them, is this powered by the central office? It's very important to me that 911 work, even if the internet and the power are gone. That's really important. And in most cases, unless they've cut the copper, unless Verizon's come around and cut the copper, you'll have that as an option.
Okay.
If not, then the next best bet is to get a good cell carrier, you know, one of the big four. I like AT&T. I like Verizon. It really is. It depends on your neighborhood. Sprint and T-Mobile would be second tier. Sprint would be actually last tier. Okay. But if you've got AT&T or Verizon, you're almost certainly going to have good E911. They also offer Lifeline service. So talk to the rep and say, look, I'm disabled. I need Lifeline, and I want to make sure E911 is working. And I'd like to know if the call center can get my GPS coordinates from my smartphone. And if they can, that's the choice to make. Okay. The way E911 works, unfortunately, is it's not, you know, if you use your landline, it's going to call your local police or your local fire. E911 is regional 911. So they have to, there's still a delay as they route it to the appropriate authority. But it's getting better because it has to. We need it to.
Right. And I thought of a sat phone. They're pricey.
No.
This tidbit of info, a friend of mine went through the Grand Canyon, took his, you know, lifetime great vacation in, you know, on the rafting.
Yeah.
And he said he called or tried to make a call multiple times.
No, he's in the canyons.
Once, not once.
Yeah.
The only call he made, he got to Phantom Ranch. It was a landline. It's the last place in the world Oh, the dear. World, but the last place in the country where mail is delivered by mule.
Oh, Lord.
Copper landline. And Jeff. He called his wife and family.
Oh, I got to run, Jeff. Thank you for your service. I really appreciate it. You made a difference. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Luis, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How you doing?
Hey, Leo. I appreciate you taking my call. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm glad to help you. What can I do for you?
So my girlfriend, she just got a new MacBook.
Yeah.
And she's trying to mirror it onto an HP monitor that she has. She bought a J5 Create in order to get the connection from the Mac into the HDMI of the monitor.
No, she doesn't need that.
She doesn't need that?
No. So the MacBook, has video out. Is it a modern MacBook?
Yeah, it's brand new.
Okay. So she's got those two Thunderbolt connectors on it. And those have video out. So what she needs to get is something compatible with the HP monitor. Probably the HP monitor takes HDMI in. I don't know what it takes in. So
it's HDMI.
Okay. So Apple sells a connector that goes from that Thunderbolt port to an HDMI connector. It's just a little dongle. And then she'll use the old HDMI cable, plug it into that, and she's good to go.
Okay, awesome. So, because the J5 Create, it wouldn't work at all. But also the monitor, it doesn't have like a PC hooked up to it at all. It's just the monitor.
Yeah. The J5 Create is I don't even. I'm looking at it. It's way overkill. You don't need anything that fancy. Oh, I see. It's wait a minute. Let me look at it. Oh, I see. So she bought the dock. Is that what she got?
Yeah. Yep. Mom.
Okay. So she plugged the dock in. That should work. And into Thunderbolt, and she plugs the monitor into the HDMI on the dock. Did that work?
No, it keeps on saying, like, no connection found or no signal found, something like, and then it just turns back off. Like, it doesn't do anything.
Okay, make sure she goes into this. She has what she needs. That's a more elaborate version, now that I'm looking at it, of what I was describing. She got a mini dock or an adapter of some kind, right? What did she buy? Do you know? Which one?
What model?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just know it has like two HDMI outs, and then it has like the Thunderbolt one that connects into the thing.
She got the mini dock.
Yeah.
So unless it's not working, dual HDMI, yeah, that means you can drive two monitors with it. First thing she should do is plug in that HP monitor. Plug it into her. Which MacBook? Is it a MacBook Pro or a MacBook?
Yeah, MacBook Pro, yeah.
MacBook Pro. She needs to plug it into MacBook Pro. Make sure the light comes on the J5.
Yeah, the light isn't coming on either.
It's broken.
You think so, yeah?
Yeah.
They would come on like if they just...
The light has to come on. Yeah, if the light's not coming on, it's not working.
Yeah. I was thinking that too, but I wasn't sure like if it needed like maybe like Windows.
No. It's for a Mac.
Windows on the PC.
No, it doesn't need anything on the PC. That's a monitor connector. It's translating the Thunderbolt connection into HDMI. It's exactly what the HP needs. If the light isn't coming on the J5, that means it's broken. You mean the light on the J5 or on the monitor?
No, on the J5.
J5. No, the light, call J5. It's supposed to light up.
Yeah,
they got it. You got a bum one. Try it in the other connector. She's got two. But if it doesn't light up, and make sure her machine's connected to the power, just so there's no question there's enough juice for it. If it doesn't light up, it's not working. And of course, you're not going to drive your monitor. Once it lights up, in fact, here's another way to test it, is plug something else into it and see if you can get a USB connector or something into it.
Yeah, I wanted to try a TV like on there first to make sure, like, because it would be the same with a TV or a monitor.
Same with a TV. That also has two USB ports. You could just plug in a USB key, see if you can see that on your Mac. My suspicion is because the light's not lighting up, it's broken. And so you call them and they'll say, send it back. We need to send you a new one.
Okay.
Because that's why they put a light on it, to let you know that it's working. And then once it's working, there's nothing you need to do. You plug the monitor in, you'll go to the display control panel on the Mac. It'll see that there's two monitors. You can arrange them. You can, because you want maybe if it's on the left of the laptop, you want to have the second monitor on the left. If it's on the right, you move it over to the right. All of that stuff.
That's well, we just wanted to like mirror it. Actually.
Yeah, or mirroring it's fine too. And that's what you would do in the display control panel. You'd say mirror. I think that the J5's broken.
Okay, awesome. And you're saying, like, even then, like, there's a simpler, like, connection besides the J5, right?
Apple just sells an HDMI connector. I mean, the J5's handy because those MacBooks only have the two things. What if you have an old Type-A USB thumb drive you want to plug in? Well, you got to get an adapter. So since you already have the J5, I mean, you could return it and say, I want my money back. This thing's broken. And then, but the Apple thing won't be that much cheaper because it's from Apple. But Apple makes the same thing, but it's just one thing. It's a Thunderbolt. Comes out to HDMI, and then you'd plug the monitor in. With this, you can have two monitors. That MacBook Pro is powerful enough to give her three displays, the laptop plus two big monitors.
Okay, awesome. Dude, I really appreciate that. Thank you. I'll
My
let her
pleasure,
know.
Luis. Out of time. Darn it. I want to keep going, but I can't. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.